from the scratchy studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another miserable mosquito hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, you bet your garden. I was amazed to see how many people out there are still using bug zappers to try and protect themselves against mosquitoes. I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll zap those zappers. Plus, a newly released heirloom poppy that looks great and produces tons of seeds for baking. And your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and dramatically delivered denunciations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up right after the news.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the watchful studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another Looking at Wildlife Hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's In the News, we present three of our favorites from a recent National Geographic article by Cassandra Brooklyn, listing the best places to watch winter wildlife in the U.S. And we quote, "While some animals hibernate in the winter, other species are at their most active. Whales, butterflies, and birds are migrating. Elephant seals are mating. And wolves are actively hunting prey. With less cover and fewer crowds obscuring your view, and the animals more actively searching for food, winter offers a surprising advantage to wildlife watchers. Whether it's bald eagles fishing in ice-fringed rivers or elk bugling through snow-dusted valleys, every corner of the country is bursting with wonderful wildlife watching this winter. Here's where to see some of these animals in action. Sunny Santa Cruz, California. To nature lovers, Santa Cruz is famous for its extraordinary density of wildlife, many of which are at their most active in winter. At the Monarch Butterfly Preserve at Natural Bridges State Beach, approximately 10,000 winged wonders spend their winter in the eucalyptus grove, forming a sort of city in the trees. The largest number of butterflies can be seen in January, as most slowly begin heading back north in early to mid-February. But you can still find monarch butterflies here throughout early March. New York City, though not typically associated with wildlife, the Big Apple is an excellent place to spot marine mammals and migrating birds in winter. Bald eagles come to fish off the shores of Manhattan when northerly portions of the Hudson River have iced over. And Arctic birds, such as snowy owls, spend winter time on the city's many islands, like the Carfree Governor's Island. Buffleheads, brown pelicans, brant, and scotters sail through the sky above the waters between Brooklyn and Manhattan, while gray and harbor seals lounge around the shores of tiny Swinburne and Hoffman Islands near Staten Island. Birds like bald eagles and pelicans can occasionally be viewed from land with the naked eye, but they, along with seals, are most frequently spotted on naturalist-led wildlife cruises that explore lesser-known islands and quieter parks of the city's harbor. down in Monterey. California has no shortage of whale watching experiences, as humpback, gray, and blue whales can be spotted along the state's coastline throughout the year. However, December through mid-April is the best time to see approximately 20,000 migrating gray whales in the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, making their way to Baja California, often with orcas and dolphins trailing behind. Wildlife watchers can spot the whales from stunning coastal trails in the Point Lobos Natural Reserve and Garapatha State Park. Harbor seals and sea lions can be spotted from here and nearby at the Elkhorn Slough wetlands. The seals lounge on the beach and sea otters float and play in the water. I just love those playful creatures. While brown pelicans, double-breasted cormorants, buffleheads, and egrets fly above. While some of these animals can be viewed from the shore, a kayak tour is the best way to see them up close.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. In just a little bit, I'll tell you why bug zappers are not only ineffective against mosquitoes, they may be killing off the most beneficial bugs in your garden. So stay tuned for it right after another of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. William, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. William, where is your here?
Tyrone, West Central PA.
How far across the strait if you start at Philly and go to Pittsburgh?
A little ways west of center, a good 20-some miles southwest of State College.
Oh, okay. Now we got you pinpointed. What can we do you for?
I love hummingbirds. I'm too lazy to put the bird feeder up. Actually, putting the bird feeder up isn't so hard. Just I'm really bad at cleaning it every time and refilling it. So I heard that scarlet runner beans attract hummingbirds. Went ahead and bought some. I was wondering when the earliest was I could start them. If I start them indoors, I'm standing at my kitchen window and it faces almost due south. If I were to start them on my kitchen windowsill in the wintertime or very early spring, do you think I would need a grow light? And I was wondering how big a one do I need, like for half a dozen seeds?
Yes, you would need a grow light. But if you're only going to grow half a dozen seeds, I think it could be a single one tube, 24 inches long. I advise against the little kits that have, a light the size of a makeup mirror or something like that. That's not doing anybody any good. But you should be able to fit a good number of seed starting containers under artificial light and keep them away from the windowsill. The light we get in the winter comes at an angle that does not favor plant life. It's
okay.
It really is a period of rest. And those sunny windowsills, as you just kind of mentioned, we don't get that much sun in the winter. And everyone I've seen gets really cold at night.
Mm-hmm.
for those who don't know, Scarlet Runner beans are an heirloom variety. They're full-size beans. You know, they need a big, tall trellis to grow on. But that trellis, I mean, turns that whole area into a giant hummingbird feeder. They produce, and here's the key, they produce red tubular flowers. The old advice I was taught to attract hummingbirds, you need three things. The color red, the color red, and the color red. So as soon as you were to put your started plants out in the late spring, where you are, I wouldn't rush it. I would wait until June 1st, because then there's very little chance the plants are going to get a cold shock, and they'll actually produce for you 2 weeks ahead of time of plants that were put out when the nights were even in the 40s. Now, peas and beans are typically direct sown. You know, you plant the seed right in the ground. But where you are, in a colder part of Pennsylvania than I am, and you don't have the heat sink of the cities nearby, I would definitely start them inside. Now there's a big balancing act here. You know, you want them to grow for at least 6 weeks. But because they are pole beans, climbing beans, they're going to lay down and, you know, try to go to sleep. So what would be interesting, I'm thinking, and this is the only plant you would do this with, maybe, like me, you have a drawer full of plastic forks you've accumulated over the years, and you know you can't throw them out, so you have to figure out something to do with them. I would put, start with a professional seed starting mix that doesn't contain chemicals. There's a lot of natural and organic ones out there. Because the organic world has exploded, the prices have come down, and you're going to be using a good size bag for 3 or 4 years, depending on how many plants you start. And then I'll reveal that when the plants go out, any soil left over goes into a container. So you want to get those like 6-pack plastic cells or 4-packs. And I know they're plastic, but they already exist. So the only thing we can do to make them more environmentally correct is to keep using them till they fall apart.
Right.
So in every, we call them cells, the individual compartments, you want to plant 2 seeds because, you know, germination is never 100%. And interestingly enough, with beans, they don't mind growing close together. I normally don't recommend them, but this might be a great case. Have you seen the little peat pots?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can plant them pot and all. It's really difficult to transplant peas or beans without making them miserable. But these peat pots, obviously you just bury it in the ground right up to the soil line, and there's no transplant shock. The only thing you have to be really careful about is when they're inside, because peat wicks its moisture into the surrounding atmosphere. And that surrounding atmosphere in the summertime is generally pretty dry. So you want to put them in like a baking pan and keep water in the pan, and it'll transpire up into the peat pot in the soil. And if you got an extra one, or you just want to get it, a humidifier pointing at the plants will give you a super start. So normally you put two seeds in, two plants come up, you get rid of one. Not in this case. You're going to plant them side by side tightly, and then you want either a tall fence, and I'm talking like an 8-foot high fence, you know, made of hardware cloth or something else that it's easy for the plants to hold on to. Mm-hmm. Although what I did, I had two standalone trellises. They came flat, but if you wanted to do something cool, you would lean the tops against each other and make a pyramid. The nice part mm-hmm. about that is you can probably get by with only planting one side, because once they reach the top, they'll just spill over and come down the other side. And the last thing is, it would be worth your while to purchase a product called inoculant, pea and bean inoculant. This is a little powder that contains a bacteria that allows plants like peas and beans to take plant feeding nitrogen from the air. It also makes them much, much healthier. I would also urge you to do a quick search at Penn State for plants that attract hummingbirds. Anything that's red and has a tubular flower attract them. But scarlet runner beans, the beans themselves are beautiful. It's a great choice.
Okay, great. So you're saying to stay away from a window. So if I start them indoors, say in my basement, do I need to get one of those heating wires underneath?
How cold is it?
It's sort of heated. It gets the return water. There are two radiators in it.
I would put dishes of water on top of the radiators and on top of any other radiators you have in the house and keep mm-hmm. them filled. That's the poor man's humidifier. Let's say we're setting up a little table in front of the radiator. I'm thinking that it would need to be a foot away from the heater, but rig the plants with string or chains so that the lights, you know, rig the lights, not the plants, so that the lights are just an inch from the surface, the top of the plant. I would plant them on April Fool's Day.
Okay, sounds good.
It's easy to remember,
great.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, well, I wish you luck, and more is more in this case. Get that first run started, but don't be afraid to plant a run direct seeded once we get to like June 1st, and they'll catch up. And, you know, the more you have, the more hummers you're going to get.
Great.
All right. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you. Love your show.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everyone out there what aims to start their own plants from seed that you must use organic potting soil, containers that are deep and narrow, a warm spot in your home to keep them happy, and provide them with the artificial light they require at this time of year. But don't go running to your local garden center for supplies just yet, because we'll be right back with tales of heirloom poppies and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY in Bethlehem, PA.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden From the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up, why bug zappers are the worst thing you can have in your backyard in the summer. They don't zap mosquitoes, but they zap all the beneficial insects that would keep pest insects off your crop. So they're a double no-no, and we'll go into double details later in the show. But right now, it is time to welcome Sarah Strady, who joined the Seed Savers Exchange in 2011 as seed historian and coordinates historical research for the Seed Bank Collection. The seed stories she collects help connect and engage Seed Savers Exchange audience of home gardeners. Sarah has an undergraduate degree in horticulture from Iowa State University, a place where we often refer to in our research. So, Sarah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being with us. Now, the reason we ask somebody from Seed Savers to be on is I get your weekly newsletter that's always spotlighting some quote-unquote new heirloom, even though that's a contradiction in terms. And I was struck by the, and you got to tell me how to pronounce this, Hutterite?
Yes, that's right.
Hutterite bread seed poppy. And we're going to talk about that along with other poppy varieties. But first, let's give a brief rendition of what Seed Savers Exchange is about, because it's unique in the world of gardening and horticulture. So although Seed Savers has started to sell seeds individually to gardeners, it didn't start out that way.
You're very correct. In 1976, Kent and Diane, our co-founders, decided to look for other home gardeners who might be growing and saving heirloom types of vegetables, flowers, and herbs primarily, and put notices in many different gardening magazines trying to recruit folks who might be interested in joining, you know, essentially a pen pal community where folks would write to each other, explain what they have, what they're growing, and then request varieties from each other. And the whole idea behind this was that by trading seeds and sharing them across many gardens, it would be a way to help preserve varieties into the future. So it was really the first step that we took to promote heirloom seed preservation.
Yeah, heirlooms by definition are plants that have been grown out by home gardeners after they were dropped from seed catalogs, if they were ever in seed catalogs at all, and they only exist today because of the generations who continued to grow them out. But I also recall that as the Seed Savers evolved, it turned into more than just a place where you could trade seeds. You have one of the doomsday vaults, right?
We do have a seed collection, yes. Pretty early on, Kent and Diane started to receive letters or phone calls from folks who were participating in our network of home gardeners sharing seeds. That group is called the Exchange today. But a number of home gardeners were worried that, just worried for the future of their variety. Perhaps they didn't have a younger gardener in the family who was planning to take on the tradition, and they wanted to make sure that their seeds could be secure and enjoyed by other people. So really since the early 1980s, we've been receiving many different kinds of varieties. And today, the seed bank collection that we maintain here at our farm near Decorah, Iowa, numbers more than 20,000 different types of primarily vegetables, herbs, and flowers. So it's a real treasure.
And these are the plants that'll save us from the mistakes of big agriculture with their monocultures. I know at least one classic example in the past was there was a corn rust in the Great Plains because acres upon acres next to other acres, the rust spread until it wiped out the crop. So that was a lesson about don't just plant one thing. But the future of various types of corn was saved when researchers were able to go back to heirloom varieties and find either a corn that was naturally rust resistant, start mixing pollens, and come up with one. But if it wasn't for those collections, huge numbers of crops would have been lost.
That's right. Heirloom varieties and open pollinated varieties in general can hold surprising undiscovered traits and features within their genetic makeup that researchers are still finding new ways to use old varieties.
Well, it shouldn't surprise anybody. Families planted these same crops year after year after year because they were the best ones. And they had probably mildly altered the DNA of the plants they were growing by growing it out successively in the same kind of region and even improving what was an excellent seed to begin with. I mean, you know, a lot of these seeds were tossed aside by seed companies in favor of improved varieties and new hybrids and stuff. And the seed savers themselves, they're real heroes.
That's kind of you to say. And, you know, we're trying to continue to share varieties with the public. And today, folks can request different types of seeds from the seed bank collection through the same exchange program that I mentioned a little earlier. We have a website where folks can browse not just what might be held in the seed bank here, but also all of the other gardeners who are in our home gardener community. So it's a networking opportunity. It's a way to see who else in my region is growing something that might do well for me. The exchange is really an exciting place to look for and browse seeds.
So my understanding is people can still become members of the exchange and they get publications every year, access to training videos and stuff like that. But also to bring more people into the mix, they can go online and order specific varieties as if it were any other seed company.
Yes, there's a couple of different ways that we're sharing seeds with the public. The seed bank is one avenue, and the exchange website is how a person can browse the varieties available there. And then we have a separate website for our annual catalog, which holds a smaller selection, but varieties that are just as interesting.
And the one thing I'll add about Seed Savers is you just don't have a bank vault. You take these varieties and grow them out every couple of years to make sure the seeds stay viable, right?
We do. Every year we grow several hundred varieties from the seed bank here at our heritage farm, and we're growing those just to produce seed. So we're trying to maximize the amount of seed we are harvesting, and that allows us to package it up, put some away for long-term storage, use part of the harvest for public distributions. And we also send seed for offsite backup at a couple of different locations, one of which being the Svalbard Global Seed Vault off the coast of Norway.
Now, the heirloom you and I are going to discuss is the Hutterite bread seed poppy. And I'll read from your material. New for 2026, this heirloom poppy from the Seed Savers collection has large showy flowers ranging from white to light pink with a darker pink patch in the center. The sturdy plants grow up to 3 feet tall and produce large elliptic pods. Seed Savers received this gorgeous, easy-to-grow flower around 2004 and suspects that it is the same variety that Sandra Cumming of Alberta, Canada, wrote about in Seed Savers' 1982 yearbook. Quote, "This summer I hope to obtain poppies from a nearby Hutterite colony that have been handed down for many years and grown extensively each year for their seeds, because I want to bake an excellent poppy seed cake." And I'll add here that, of course, I had to do more research. Hutterites are a communal Anabaptist group numbering over 55,000 who live in self-sufficient agricultural colonies, mainly in Western Canada and the United States Northern Plains. Founded in 1528 in Europe, they practice pacifism, share all property, and utilize modern technology for large-scale farming. They're like the Amish, but more technically progressive. So let's talk more about poppies in general and this variety. So one thing I noticed is you shouldn't start these in pots. You should really plant them directly in the soil because they don't transplant well, right?
Yes, poppies typically develop a taproot, so that makes transplanting them very difficult.
And you say they're very frost hardy, right? You can plant them in the ground when there's still a couple of light frosts around.
The best time to plant seeds is actually in early winter because they require a period of cold stratification in order to germinate. And a person really just has to sprinkle them on top of the soil because they also require light to germinate. So you don't want to cover them up with much of anything. And they'll start to sprout as the spring season progresses. And you can thin them out if they're too thickly sown. But yeah, just throw the seeds down and let them kind of do their thing.
Now, let me get this correct. If you plant them this spring, will they have time to develop seeds?
They should, because this is a annual reseeding type of poppy, and they're a late spring, early summer bloomer. And a lot of people like to let the pods fully dry down and also use them for ornamental, like flower arrangements. You can harvest the seed from them, but then also use the pods as a filler for flower arrangements too.
This is a good time to remind people that if you do want to save seed, you have to let the crop grow until it's way past, quote, ripeness. I would imagine you have to be able to hear the seeds shake before they're fully viable and you can use them in the future.
That's right. Letting them dry while standing in the garden is always a good tip, as long as your environment isn't too humid or damp that would potentially damage the seeds as they're trying to dry down.
And that's another thing I wanted to ask you because I couldn't find it. What's the growing range for these things?
Well, I believe this type of poppy does well pretty much in most of the growing zones of the United States. If you're sowing them outdoors, you will need cold enough temperatures to successfully trigger that cold stratification. But I believe pretty much anywhere from about zone 3 to zone 10 or so should be just fine.
Well, you're not going to get the chill in zone 10 unless it's this year repeated again, which nobody wants to have happen. But let's say 3 to 7 encompasses most gardeners. So again, I requested a pack of seeds from Seed Savers, and they sent 2 because I love poppy seeds, but they're getting hard to find. Most bagel shops don't do poppy seeds anymore. And one of my favorite things, which my daughter made for me, by the way, and I ate right before we went on the air, was a lemon poppy seed muffin, which is just absolutely delicious. And these have been grown for untold millennia for use in baking.
That's right. And Sandra Cumming, who we believe was growing this variety and sharing it with other gardeners in the Seed Savers Exchange community, had an interest in acquiring the recipe that the Hutterite ladies used with this variety. And unfortunately, that recipe has not survived to be passed down to us. Someone out there may have it.
Now, I'll read from your description. Poppy plants produce plentiful amounts of tiny seeds for baking, cooking, and oil extraction. You can sprinkle poppy seeds on breads, rolls, bagels, muffins, and pastries. Add the seeds into batters for muffins, cakes, and lemon poppy seed desserts, one of my favorite. You can also ground the seeds into pastes for use in Indian, Middle Eastern, and Eastern European dishes. And you can extract the oil from poppy seeds to use in your own salad dressings. Now, I will tell you from experience that in one of my first gardens, my wife and I accidentally stumbled across a lone six-pack of sesame plants. You know, somebody had put it down in the middle of a bunch of tomato plants, and we looked at it, and we thought, how crazy is this? So we grew them out, and they were beautiful plants, and we harvested them and used the seeds in baking. But I got to tell you that when we did try to press our own oil from them, we're lucky homicide detectives didn't show up at the house. We had no idea what we were doing, and all we did was make an oily mess. Well, Sarah, we're out of time for this segment, but let's get you to hang around, and we'll finish up after the break. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will be making my annual appearance at the Allentown Public Library on April 15th at 6 p.m. this year. More details to come, but save the date. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. So, you want to put up a bat house to eat your mosquitoes? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I'll explain what you need to really do to have a bat house that gets occupied. Plus your fabulous phone calls and who knows what else. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will explain why bug zappers are a double disaster. Take it down now. But right now, we're going to go back to our interview with Sarah Strady from the Seed Savers Exchange. Here's a tip. To harvest the seeds, wait until the pods dry on the plant, then shake the seeds into a bowl or bucket. That sounds good, and I'm sure much simpler than threshing out sesame seeds. But there's also a link down at the bottom of the description of the Hutterite bread seed poppy in the Seed Savers online description. Find a recipe for the best ever lemon poppy seed loaf here. And we're certainly going to try that. I just love poppy seeds.
Excellent. Generations of gardeners have grown this variety, so hopefully our audience today will want to try it out as well and see what recipes of their own they find it is perfect with.
So this is an annual plant living for 1 year that readily reseeds. But because it has that chilling requirement, if you were to leave half of your crop unpicked or shake the seeds out onto ground, you'd get maybe a more mature plant much earlier that following season, right?
Yes, that's right. And if you live in an area that maybe doesn't get cold enough for that chilling period, you can always place the seeds in a bag in the refrigerator on a slightly moist paper towel for several weeks, and it will have the same effect as if they had been planted outside during the winter.
So I'm going to hold you to this. If I plant these seeds as soon as I can, which will be when the ice sheets melt, I will get seeds at the end of the year, or I should.
You should, yeah. And you could put them outside now if you do have snow, sprinkle them on top of that, and it will find the soil and germinate in the spring.
So those tap roots are very aggressive, and these aren't seeds that need to be buried, just sprinkled lightly on top of loose soil?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Any chance you know how many other poppies you have in your collection?
In the seed bank collection, there are several dozen. Not all of them are currently available. We always have to be careful about how much seed we're keeping for storage versus what can be shared with folks. Mm-hmm. But there's a number of poppies in our online catalog which have come from the seed bank. So there's a selection of red and pink and purple colors to choose from.
Right, because as Ian Fleming famously wrote, the poppy is also a flower.
And it's a very showy flower.
A very showy flower, and could be grown just for those merits themselves. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I've probably taken up too much time. My producer will send me out to the woodshed. For more information about this poppy, other poppies, and the organization that is saving heirloom varieties on a large scale, visit seedsaversexchange.org.
Yes, that's our main website. And also make sure to check out the exchange website where you can browse varieties that gardeners in your region might be growing and connect with other folks who have a shared interest in heirloom seeds as well. A lot of seed swapping across garden fences or through the mailbox. It's really exciting to see what types of plants other folks are growing and taking care of.
All right. Well, once again, want to thank Sarah Strady from Seed Savers Exchange for talking to us today about the exchange, poppies in general, and specifically the Hutterite bread seed poppy that I will be growing this year. All right, Sarah, again, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much.
As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we are calling, do mosquito zappers actually zap any mosquitoes? In which I will once again try and toss old correct nonsense into the ash can of forever. Now, this all started when I stumbled across a Facebook site called Kindness for All Living Beings, which that day pictured a wonderful cutaway view of a brush pile deliberately left outdoors, showing the various forms of wildlife that would occupy such a pile over winter, from lungless salamanders, who live in the bottom where the humidity is the highest, to bumblebees and bunnies, not together, in the middle, and finally, overwintering birds up top. I wanted to run the drawing on our You Bet Your Garden Facebook page, which we did, But whenever we pick up something from another source like this, I always try and scroll through other parts of the site to make sure there aren't any posts I would regret calling attention to later. There were not, but there was a recent post explaining correctly that outdoor bug zappers kill few, if any, mosquitoes. A truth that sparked a minor outrage on the site. And then the comments veered off into, put up a bat house instead, which also doesn't work. And I will deliver those batty details next week. Anyway, I was dismayed by the number of people relying on old, outdated information and appalled by the few who actually defended the use of zappers. So here I am, sword and shield in hand, prepared to reveal the truth and help you not get bit and or waste your money this summer. This is from the San Gabriel Valley Mosquito Control District. Quote, to investigate the effectiveness of bug zappers on mosquitoes, the Department of Entomology and Applied Ecology at the University of Delaware spent 10 weeks analyzing the contents of bug zappers. Altogether, over 13,000 insects were zapped and collected. The results of the 13,000 zapped insects, less than 0.25% were mosquitoes. Over 99% were beneficial insects. Experts and studies from Colorado State University Extension and the American Mosquito Control Association have also concluded that bug zappers are not effective at controlling biting mosquitoes. Doug Mahoney interviewed a wide range of university mosquito experts for an article in Wirecutter. And I quote, the first thing that Jonathan Day, PhD, a medical entomologist at the University of Florida, said to us in an interview was, I'm surprised that bug zappers are even still around. At which point we move on to moths, which happily dive headfirst into anything even resembling a bright light. And they take over the night shift for pollination, according to the U.S. Forest Service. In fact, a 2018 joint study from the universities of York, Newcastle, and Hull found that moths may play a much broader role as plant pollinators than previously suspected. By tracking pollen DNA, the authors of the study found that moths pollinate a wide variety of plants, including food crops such as peas and soybeans. In addition, the study showed that moths were able to carry pollen over greater distances than honeybees, which might help to prevent inbreeding among plants. The bottom line, we should probably lay off large-scale moth killing. Another victim of these zappers, according to Dr. Day, are parasitic wasps, which, quote, take the brunt of the damage when it comes to zappers. They are very small insects, harmless to humans, that utilize other insects, like pest caterpillars, as hosts, often laying eggs in them and killing the pest insect in the process. According to the Virginia Cooperative Extension, these mini wasps are very important in agriculture, attacking a wide range of insect pests that feed on important crops and people. And by people, he means ticks, everybody's least favorite arachnid. Beetles, flies, caterpillars, and aphids are among the other insects utilized as hosts and ultimately killed by those little bitty wasps. In fact, the University of Maryland Extension suggests that parasitic wasps may be the single most important biological control method that gardeners have. Not exactly the kind of insect we want to be electrocuting. Wirecutter author Mahoney continues, the negative sentiment towards bug zappers appears to be nearly unanimous. We found similar statements from Iowa State University, the University of Maine, and the Texas Tech University Infant Risk Center. All of these and other sources indicate that bug zappers should be avoided at all costs. And finally now, here's a special treat for the faint-hearted among you. Quick, run away now. This is where things get weird and a little gross, explains Mahoney. Another strike against bug zappers is that they electrocute bugs with such force that some insect parts, like hair, legs, and wings, can be blown off the body. If these aerosolized bug parts are carrying any disease, well, now that disease has just been misted into the air you're breathing. Isn't that lovely? This information is based on a study conducted in the year 2000 by Kansas State University researchers and published in the journal Current Microbiology. It tracked the, quote, spread of bacteria and bacterial virus during electrocution of houseflies. The conclusion was that bug zappers could play a role in the spread of infectious disease. Discussing the study, one of the authors said, "We were surprised to see so much microorganism dissemination. We thought there may be a few bacteria that got spread, but we're finding that really significant amounts of the fly will scatter. According to the study, bug parts can be misted a distance of almost 7 feet." That's all for this week. Next time out, we will go into detail about the easy and correct ways to prevent or greatly limit mosquito bites this summer. No chemicals, no zappers, no fooling. Well, those sure were a lot of good reasons to zap your bug zapper, now wasn't they? Luckily, you can read the details over at your leisure, or of course your leisure, by following the link for the Gardens Alive question of the week at the top of the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes, my producer is threatening to poach my poppies if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100 and follow the prompts to You Bet Your Garden. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming to our garden shores at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. And as always, when you respond, please include your location. And visit our Facebook page, where we post new photos of our gardens and invite you to send us photos of your precious plants, share your thoughts about the show, receive important and informative updates about the show, a link to the written version of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week, and links to our priceless podcast. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week From the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA, You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when his infant spaceship passed through a cloud of red kryptonite on its way to Kansas. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprope. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. Special thanks to our guest, Sarah, from Seed Savers Exchange, for educating us about poppies. And we all learned more than we did before she educated us, right? I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'm dodging so much black ice that I actually bought a pair of ski poles to make sure I don't fall down, go boom outside, so I can be sure to see you again next week.